Well, a week from tomorrow, it'll be Father's Day. So as an early Father's Day present to Andrew Kolarik's dad, I'll call him Dr. Kolarik, right? Isn't that... Andrew,
absolutely. How you doing, Ian?
All right, didn't we have that conversation? Your dad likes to hear you being referred to as doctor.
Yeah, I get a small lecture when I don't insist on the title. He's a very proud father.
It should be. So there you go, Dad Kolarik. Special. And then also, where do you exactly do you get a PhD in information systems security?
Well, actually, in the British styled system in Auckland, New Zealand, from the University of Auckland.
How cool is that? This is really neat.
Thesis
you probably
only.
Told me that.
None of these lengthy classes, just one long apprenticeship and extended beating.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure you told me all that, I just forgot. But it's way cool. And so, I don't know what's on your agenda, but I have to ask you about this Google Earth thing. Have you been watching that?
A little bit,
Okay. Now, I know it's not like a pure privacy thing because it's kind of more, it's theoretically, it's observing space that's in the public sector, right? That's in the, sort of the public domain.
Yeah, the core issue is how do you have privacy in a public space? I mean, ultimately, satellite systems that now view, what your clothes are and, with such resolution that you can tell who's male and female to the most part. License plates can be viewed depending on the angle.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. How can anybody tell anything other than the top of somebody's head and the top of their shoes from space?
Well, the satellite systems are actually more refined than that. We actually get a limited version. Just to, eliminate too much viewing. But the fact of the matter is, we're using telescopes pointed at us instead of the other way out.
How do we get the angles? That's the part I haven't been able to figure out.
Well, it's...
I always thought satellites were passing overhead, and they were looking down. And that part I got, like, I can look at the roof of my house on Google Earth, right? I mean, it's not an updated image, and they tell me that. I mean, I think it's not really, I mean, it's like a five-year-old satellite picture of my neighborhood. But I can see my roof, but I can't see, like, my front door. And that's what some of the pictures I'm seeing that are popping up, they're of angles. And I just don't get how that's possible.
Well, it's they call it a footprint, the area by which a satellite can either be transmitting to or be viewing. And just because the camera shutter, so to speak, is directly above, that doesn't mean that it only sees what's directly above.
So the directly angles, below.
Yeah, so the angles basically creep outward. So what you're getting is a composite at an angle, and then the more extensive towards the edge of the footprint, the more angle you get.
So it's, you don't think it's suspicious, this image that popped up this week that got a lot of play, of seeing a woman, you could see her thong, supposedly, from a Google Earth picture as she was almost entirely inside of a car. The door was open, the car door was open, she was putting in groceries or something like that, and she was almost in the cabin of the car, but as she was leaning forward, her thong popped out, and you could see it almost from the back. It was almost like a picture taken standing on the roof of a nearby car, looking into the car. That doesn't strike you as odd, I mean, in terms of, I mean, as that seems possible.
I don't know the who was operating the particular camera, if there was any modification for a deliberate intent, but I have to believe that, human nature takes its own course, and technology is used to enhance that course.
Yes. Well, I mean, trust me, I'm not saying that doesn't sound like a totally creepy guy thing to do, to be have this big giant lens in space and be spending your time looking for thongs. I mean, I get that part. And if anybody's going to find that, it's going to be some lonely camera operator somewhere in some cement room. But I couldn't quite get the idea of how that technology works. So maybe you can help me out with this. Are we talking about satellites that are rotating overhead? Are we talking about permanently fixed cameras that are pointed toward the United States at all times?
The satellites are in geosynchronous orbit.
That's what I thought.
Okay, they don't move very much, but they can be moved, okay, remotely. So they can be changed in position and rotation to change. Let's say at 10:15 every day, right above us, the satellite will be. Those can be recalibrated to change the time of day in the geosynchronous orbit. Also, on the satellite systems, the lenses themselves can be modified and somewhat rotated for clarity and position and angle and so forth.
So that's where we'd start to get images of the side of somebody's face as opposed to just looking down at the top of their head.
Yes, and there are limitations to just how much angle you can get.
I would think.
I mean, okay. We are talking about a circular surface that we're observing from space. And so you get all kinds of skewed angles and limitations in focus. Just like if you're trying to take a picture and there's somebody close to you and somebody far away, the camera has trouble and you have to pick one of the two. That's the same thing with satellite imagery.
All right, so what else then? That was been sort of captivating me, and I haven't read a clear story yet on some of this technology, so thank you for explaining it to me. Now, that having been said, what are you looking at these days as a privacy expert, Dr. Kolarik?
Well, actually, in the realm of privacy, I've been following one major issue, and that is the continual flow of our personal information overseas for accounting, for intergovernmental records on us, flight information, intelligence sharing between Europe, America, the Pacific Rim. There's a large amount of sharing going on now between governments. So if you're flying around the world, your records are going with you.
And we've talked a little bit about how some of that information is collected, RFID, some of these other things which can register how we're making purchases or our spending habits. But are you talking about anything more specific when you say not only are we traveling around the world, but so is our information is traveling with us? You just mean metaphorically, long before we show up someplace, our information could be there waiting.
In most cases now, because everyone is afraid of turning airplanes into missiles, every passenger that has any potential for risk or at the request of a government who wants to minimize their risk, our governments are exchanging records. So I schedule a flight to go to, say, Paris, and the French government, if they feel they need my records, or at least a summary of my threat risk potential, they have access to it. And vice versa. If, folks from Morocco are flying to Washington, D.C.
Well, at what point does our information, in your criteria, at what point does our private information become a public a commodity? When we've committed a crime, when we've been arrested for a crime but not convicted of a crime, only when we're convicted. I mean, how do we determine that?
Well, that's a huge problem. We haven't determined that. what we have done is abdicated to various groups, such as the press or our government officials,
right,
or our judicial system, or even private citizens posting information about potential predators. We've abdicated where those lines really are unless they fall into the area of defamation or slander. So unless there's a judicial personal recourse, somebody else is making those decisions.
Well, I mean, isn't that always going to be the trade-off in a free society?
Well, there's a difference between free and simply a free-for-all. Now, you know, back in 1986, I got a traffic ticket. Now, that's, 20 years ago, 21 years ago. You can do a Google search, and you can find that I had that traffic ticket. Now, why does the world need to know that? Because I'm a reckless driver 20 years later?
Well, let me play devil's advocate on that. Because we assume that that information is being perceived as having value when, and I'll throw this out here as a possibility, the fact that your ticket is still online somewhere in somebody's computer base actually reflects the fact that it has no value, that it is so valueless that it's not worth the time for some government entity somewhere to take the time to erase it, because that would require hiring people to go and determine something like that. So frankly, because it is so considered so insignificant, it's just thrown onto the internet along with all of the more recent traffic violations in that county where you got that ticket 21 years ago.
I agree with you in principle, except we have so many media services now that will grab hold of any content in order to try to make it valuable. So even the ludicrous has value and gets proliferated at light speed through the internet.
Well, of course, only the ludicrous has value in a public society, or we wouldn't have Kevin Federline. But I think that there's something else to be said for the fact that just in general, we've got so much information that we don't have time to sort through, or time or the energy to sort through what is valuable. And so it's always just sort of this data blizzard that gets shoved into these, programs, because at one time it was public information. Right, it was taxpayer money. It was you violated the law, and this is all what we have by having a sort of a transparent society, and that is what gets on the internet. But I think what would bother me more is if you couldn't look up the fact that Zsa Zsa Gabor had a traffic violation with that police officer. If we can find out your address and your phone number and whatever else we can from a ticket on the internet. For Andrew Kalerick, Dr. Andrew Kalerick, then shouldn't we be able to find out that same information about Zsa Zsa Gabor and the famous incident in which she slapped a police officer? And that's the part of privacy that I don't get, is suddenly, somehow somebody finds the time and the energy to remove Zsa Zsa Gabor's home address and phone number from the internet, but not you.
Well, yeah, there is definitely a multiple standards. The those with resources, time, effort, connections, and I'm not just saying it's some kind of a gross conspiracy. If you've got the time and resources, you can expunge a whole lot of things from a whole lot of places. But it is like whack-a-mole, at the carnival. Once you hit the mole, another one pops up, and if you've got the effort, you can keep doing this and keep it under control. But we really need to have a universal standard of conduct or a shelf life on our personal information or our personal lives. I'm not a so-called celebrity, okay? I like being treated like one sometimes, but you know, I'm just a regular guy living my life and so forth. You know, I'm not paid to be in the movies or on television and so forth.
Yeah, but you are what police would refer to as a person of interest.
That's true. I definitely do dwell in realms of law enforcement, and I am one of the good guys, I hope.
I hope, but I mean, don't you love it when they say he's not a suspect, but he's a person of interest? But I think that's part of it. You're a notable, you may not be a celebrity in the case that people are celebrating Dr. Andrew Kolarik, but you're a notable personality. You are somebody with a certain amount of recognition, if not fame.
Well, but with that comes a double-edged sword. And so I also, you know, I have to be careful who I say what to and so forth, because it might get misquoted.
Right.
But at the same time, that's in the public space. I step into the public space and you take those risks. But once you're talking about information and privacy in the private space, things that actually impact your life, this is where we really have to have a serious national and international discussion.
Okay. Well, I want to push that a little bit, because I think it actually goes back to the Google Earth thing. Several people have been, I believe, rightfully convicted of crimes in the, what they call the, I guess, the upskirt video shootings, where they go to a mall and they take a video camera or a still camera and they shoot up the skirts of women who are on escalators or on stairwells, or they have mirrors on their shoes, or however they do it. And several people have been convicted for that, and the argument is that although they are in public and you can see it with, and by looking up, that you don't have the right to take a picture of it. You don't have a right, that somebody's privacy should include even the area that's underneath their skirt. Now, the reason why I say that is, again, I go back to where this Google Earth thing is going to go if there are not the kind of specific guidelines of which you speak. Because I think we're going to come into a whole new era of, if you'll pardon the term, kind of upskirt voyeuristic video, depending on how and who is in charge of these and who's controlling these video cameras or these giant, you know, lenses in space.
Well, if you have a backyard that's fenced in, walled off, out in the middle of nowhere, you're not alone anymore. So you don't have a personal space above you. And I agree, and I think that now those technologies, because there's not a lot of them, okay, there's not a lot of public access to that stuff. Even the private access, with a stroke of a pen, could be restricted. As long as the international satellites traveling above are also conforming to those standards.
Well, there goes the nude bocce.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and we didn't even get to the story of Andrew's speaker and all of what he went through, which I thought was very compelling, about the TV case, but we'll leave that for another day. Always on the job, always looking into the latest in privacy issues, Dr. Andrew Kolarik. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Ian.